Autonomous driving and electric cars are what we used to consider transportation's future. Now that they're here, what's next? We'll have the thoughts and suggestions of our expert panel from the floor of this year's CES. And now, here's your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on AutoLine this week. We're coming to you from the floor of the 2017 CES show, formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show. We're going to be talking today about some of the hottest topics that are being discussed at this show, and I've got three terrific guests to talk about them, starting with Peter Rawlinson, the Chief Technology Officer for Lucid Motors. Also, we have Erez Dagan, the Senior VP from Mobileye out of Jerusalem, and Alexander Mankowski, who is a futurist with Mercedes-Benz based in Germany. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Alexander, we got to start talking about autonomous cars.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Got to be the hottest topic here at the show today.
Yeah.
It was last year, even more so this year. But one of the big discussions is, do we go to level three, where a car is partly autonomous, but then we have to hand it over to the driver? Or do we skip that and go right to level four? What are your thoughts on that?
Now we can't skip that completely, yeah, because of the technological evolution. And that's one thing, technology, but the other thing is the culture of mobility, so to say. Yeah, we as human beings, yeah, we are technological guys, yeah, and then we say autonomous driving, no problem, sensors here, sensors there, something. But the normal guy outside wouldn't understand that. So we need some time, I guess 7 to 10 years, until the people adapt to these kinds of autonomous cars, drones, whatsoever it is. And in this time, we have to think not so much about levels, but how to make the cars understandable, how to make the cars cooperate with the people, cooperate from the outside, that you can understand, hey, the car is waking up, hey, the car is approaching me, for something like that, yeah, if there's nobody in it. Things like that. So that's the task at hand. Not so much technology. I think the engineers do that anyway. But the cultural point of view. Yeah, the cultural development. That's the thing. And I guess 7 to 10 years is the time frame. And in this time, we have to work on these cooperative design. That's new thing. That's the most important stuff.
Erez, what are your thoughts? And of course, Mobileye is one of the foremost technology leaders in this new technology. You're dealing with all different kinds of companies. Level three or skip to level four?
So I think it's not two alternate options. One approach of the market would be to escalate the current level of driver assistance systems to partial autonomy or to eyes-off autonomy, which means that the driver may be called back in by a takeover request, but will get some grace time, and that will be the end customer vehicle. You're driving on the highway, you get too bored of it, you switch to that mode, and you know that you have, at the worst case, 10 seconds to get back in the loop. You can really do something with your time while you're in that position. In parallel to that, out of a very great need, rather than just, and I completely agree about the cultural hurdles, but out of very great need in big cities, a true level four will kick in as a shared mobility service, and I think that will two trends will happen simultaneously.
You will have these slow moving objects, yeah, like pods, huh? Mm-hmm. Transporting people fully automatically but slow, yeah, and then it's not a level question, yeah, and the people then get used to that, hopefully.
Correct.
Yeah, and start to interact with these things, and then it will work.
Peter, you're coming out with a car that is going to be autonomy
ready,
no?
Well, certainly. Level four is an inevitability within the lifetime of our platform. So we're engineering, designing for level four straight out of the box in terms of the capability of the car, in terms of the sensor suites that are incorporated, in terms of the processing power, the data storage, and also the dual level redundancy systems for steering and braking, which are necessary. Yeah. Then we'll be able to flash over the air to level four at such time in the future when the software is there, when the big data has been accrued and the legislative hurdles have been overcome.
When do you think that might be?
I can't see it happening till 2021, around then.
Alexander, one of the other big things being talked about on the show, and it started before the show, but it's still discussed here, is using artificial intelligence to turbocharge this process and make it happen faster and make the cars more intelligent.
I suggest to avoid the term artificial intelligence, strongly. All the techie guys, the engineers are telling me this is machine learning. Yeah, machine learning is the core of, he can explain that better than me. But then the decision where the car is going, the planning process, that's not artificial intelligence, that is very deterministic programming. Yeah, because if something happens, an accident or something, then somebody would have to say, hey, this was this line of code, was wrong or right, or somebody jumped into the, like that. Deterministic. That's not artificial intelligence, like the car can decide freely, hey, I take this way or this way. That's not the case. But the machine learning, this, I think your job to explain that, this is you need that. But the machine learning, the results of the machine learning, they are corrected by other sensors. Yeah, so you have to see machine learning is labeling, and it's labeling, and it's kind of, it's not learning in a human way. Yeah, it's no aha moment. Yeah, it's training and labeling. Yes, no, right, wrong, and so on. And if there's some, then the dinosaur crosses the street. Yeah, then the car that's not labeled. Yeah, and the machine learning system wouldn't recognize the dinosaur, and then the other system should get in and say, okay, there is something on the road, brake. Yeah, even if you don't know that's a dinosaur. That's the thing. So it's not artificial intelligence, that's why it's machine learning, but you can explain that better.
I agree. So I agree, and I have some additions to that. Yeah. There are two types of intelligence. Whenever you talk about intelligence, there is causal intelligence. A causes B causes C, and that's the rules-based traceable intelligence. You can go back and check what happened.
The deterministic.
And there is the data-based intelligence, which is correlation. A and B happen together, and I don't really care why. Whenever there is this pattern of pixels, that's a pedestrian. I don't need the explanation of why. Mm. And that's the training that we do with data. It is true that in our sensing system, we're combining both data-based intelligence and rules-based safeguards, as similar to what you said in the sensing. But importantly, when it comes to the decision-making of the vehicle, one of the open frontiers, which we will also collaborate with the Lucid on our vehicle, is the driving policy being a reinforcement learning a kind of a job. It's not supervised learning in the normal sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a different case of making the computer undergo million miles driving lessons.
Yeah.
Negotiate, which is the hardest hurdle right now for adoption of autonomous driving. Negotiate with other road users.
So there are different strategies, but in case Mercedes-Benz, sort of in my role there, I would say in the end, when the decision comes, braking or change direction, then it should be deterministic and totally clear what the car is doing. When the people telling, oh, this car has learned very, very well, and this one has not learned very, very well, and so on, that would be awful. Yeah, you as a producer say, this one is very intelligent, this one is dumb. Yeah, and you have bought a dump car. Oh. Yeah.
Nobody wants to buy a dump car, I don't suppose. So are you going to be using any artificial intelligence?
Well, our approach very much is to run a superficial level of AD in the background so that the car is comparing what the driver actually does with what the AD system would have done if it had been switched on. And we can do this for millions of miles, as Erez has said. So it's a really great real-world comparison. This kind of, the AD system is working, but it's not switched on. So it's imagining what the car would do, and it's comparing it with the driver, have a good or bad. And then we can see this direct comparison and learn over millions of miles, over a few years actually. And I think that gives invaluable feedback.
Peter, you're developing an electric car. You were the chief engineer on the Tesla Model S.
Yes.
Now you're doing the new car for Lucid Motors. Are we reaching a tipping point with electric cars? And the reason I ask that is, certainly in the United States, electric cars are a mere fraction of all car sales.
Yes.
Even in California,
which
is
true.
So pro-electric car, it's maybe 3%.
Yes.
Are we going to hit a tipping point?
We are. And the catalyst for that tipping point is going to be the price of battery energy, the joules per dollar that you can buy, the kilowatt hours per dollar. And we're seeing a trend towards a dramatic reduction in that price. I mean, electric cars are eminently better than gasoline cars in so many ways. Tesla's shown that. Lucid's going to take that to a whole new level the world isn't expecting, because we've got these attributes which we're teasing out as a result of electrification. But the real influence is not going to be the volumetric or gravimetric energy density of cells. That's actually not progressing that much. It's going to be catalyzed by the affordability of cell energy. And that's going to have a profound effect, creating a tipping point within the next 5 years, I believe, and transform world mobility towards EVs.
What's changing that's going to drive down the price?
It's the economy of scale, the finessing of the process, and to a lesser degree, a shift in form factor from 18650 to 21700.
Now, I know that the Department of Energy set a goal around 2010 of trying to hit $125 per kilowatt hour cost. And at that point, they said you'd pretty much be roughly equal with an internal combustion engine.
Yeah.
Where do you think the price is going and when?
That price is extremely pessimistic and cautious. It's going to be a lot more affordable than that very soon.
$100, $80, what do you think?
Well, it depends when.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to go sub-$100.
Okay, let's say 2020. Just to pick a date and put you on the spot.
2021, sub-$100.
Wow. Okay, Alexander, you're the futurist. Do you agree with that?
No, I think this view is too narrow in a way. Yeah, because culture, huh? People and culture and infrastructure and what is electricity. There are many people, if it's raining, they wouldn't touch a 400 volt cable to charge the car. If you look at people today, yeah, today they're making advertisement or e-mobility and something, and what you're doing, they're standing there, yeah, they're fueling the car with electricity. Yeah, this is totally crazy. So you see, I guess if the people, I would say 10 to 15 years will it take until the people are able to find that naturally and to find that this is like a gasoline. Yeah, gasoline is explosive, but nobody has.
When you fuel a gasoline car, you're effectively holding a potential flamethrower.
Yeah, that's true, but the people are accustomed to that. So,
yeah.
So I guess futurist means you get to have develop a sense of time.
Yeah.
Sense of time is technology, is one thing. Sense of time, culture, people, that's much stronger. Yeah, because we are not fast. So if you have a mass, tipping point means the masses will do that, yeah, and the masses will do that, I would say, in the earliest in 15 years.
Erez, I would imagine that Mobileye is sort of technology agnostic
masses.
In this case. You're after autonomy. It doesn't matter if it has a gasoline engine or an electric motor, does it?
Correct. The level of perception of what's going on around and making decision based on it, yes, but the two trends are well intertwined. Social goals right now has to do with carbon emission and congestions. These two lead to electric autonomy.
Yeah.
Very, very. They go together.
I totally agree with that. I think there is a convergence, a conflation of four mega trends, and they're social trends and they're technological trends. The emergence and viability of the electric vehicle, the connected car. We're seeing ride sharing and autonomous driving. And overlaying and overarching that is the business model, the affordability. The reality is that those trends are going to be catalyzed and initiate in mega cities, in areas of population density. And that's where gasoline-powered cars are gas guzzlers. The gas mileage goes down. The business model for running those cars is abysmal. And that's where this combination of autonomy and ride sharing and EVs yeah. is really going to grow explosively.
I see another overlap point, which is interesting now that you're speaking about it. So we're shifting from purchasing vehicles to purchasing miles in a way soon, and vehicles with higher utilization, vehicles that can endure longer accumulated driven miles, which I believe that electric vehicles yeah. has an advantage over combustion engine, moving parts, etc. I would expect that to also be a factor.
But I give you a different perspective. If you have autonomous cars, what is the most important part of the autonomous car? Then the interior.
Yes.
The people will have their own interior, so their living room. You wouldn't ride-share your living room. Yeah. So this practice of have your own thing, your own moving home. Yeah. This will grow. That's not ride sharing. So we will have different movements. Yeah. yeah? And yeah. So we will have one
your own vehicle versus.
It's very very
vehicle.
Owned. It's more owned than today, because today you can ask the people ask somebody, hey, what's the color of the fabrics here, yeah, and they don't know because they never looked up. But if your car drives autonomously, then you would find out, okay, this is my room, I can make beautify it, and I can invite friends there, but not everybody. So you have a different kind of mobility.
Yeah.
And one kind of mobility will be these moving homes, these relaxation places, mobile offices, yeah, like that. One thing will be in this part of the cities, these sharing boxes, yeah, like a kind of public transportation and public private mixed up transportation like that. But we will see a diverse world of mobility solutions, or not mobility solutions, cars solutions and services and so on coming. Yeah, it's not that it's you buy miles. Yeah, if you have your own living room there, it's not about miles. Yeah,
that's one of the. I think
so
you're
they're
right.
Very different. So we have very diverse.
Yeah, I agree with you. The diverse usage, but I think you raise a wonderful point, Alexander.
Yeah.
Because I think this is going to be more about the interior of the car.
Yeah.
And this is what's the differentiator with Lucid. We've got this extraordinary interior space.
Yeah.
We've got a car which is more compact on the outside, and it's much bigger on the inside. It's more like an E-Class Mercedes on the outside.
Yeah.
It's got the interior space of a long wheelbase S-Class Mercedes.
FO15, our research car, you see that as the technology was
yes,
on the outside.
That's right. That's
on the
right.
inside, you could sit
that's
vis-a-vis
right.
even.
It's going to be very much about the inside. So
yeah.
we have a concept of cars being designed from the inside out,
yeah.
and it's going to change the proportion of the vehicle, the shape, and the aesthetic.
But what do you think of what Alexander is saying, that people who have these beautiful interiors are not going to want to share it. They're going to want to customize it.
I think he's absolutely right. I think we're both right, actually.
But you want to do car sharing and ride sharing,
no? We want to do both. I think there's going to be the joy of individual ownership for a great car, which is a wonderful machine, a great driver's car, great riding in car. There's going to be that model, and I think there's going to be the ride sharing as well. We're going to see, as Alexander has said, a really diverse a world of different applications,
kind of
usage.
Yeah. Kind of a zoo of mobility, mobile things.
Uh-huh.
I think this will be very funny.
Yeah.
There's another model which is not the autonomous vehicle as part of the infrastructure of the city, but you purchase that vehicle and you don't feel so possessive about it, like you have a key that you can transfer to someone and monetize on your asset.
Yeah.
Just in the case it's not your
and the car's earning money for you, then I know
exactly.
that. Yeah.
So that could mean that someone who could afford a certain level of car could actually stretch to a more expensive car because they can fund it by sharing it. So you can have a really diverse ownership.
Yeah, we had a label for that called Double Purpose. That was an interior solution, your own car. When you drive to work with your own car, and then you had you took the seats, and you had some flapping mechanism, and then it was public, and it tried to earn money for you. Yeah, no parking place. Yeah, it run around as a robot taxi. Then it comes back to you, and you put it back in private mode, and then it was yours with all your stuff and all. Was a funny thing.
I completely agree with you that the interior is going to become so much more important than today, and people are going to do far more in that interior, and there's going to be far more data coming in and out of the car, and that's one of the other topics here, and I'd like you to address this to begin with. Who is going to control access to that data? Because to me, that's where the real pot of gold is in this move to mobility.
Let's look at first at the data, which is critical to be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Not the data which is the consumer data. Let's put it aside.
There's
first.
Vehicle data and consumer data,
let's,
right?
Let's talk about the vehicle data, which is critical for the solution. That data, a very interesting analogy that I heard is this data and nuclear energy are similar as long as it's contained, it's valuable.
Yeah, that's a good
idea. That's a good line.
Yeah,
so as long as it's contained, it's very valuable. Yeah. So we cannot, as a society, overlook that data that helps you, for example, validate the autonomy. We can't accept a limitation from the consumer saying, "I don't want." We will have to anonymize and make sure the consumer is not affected by it. But all of the OEMs are, and that's we see it beautifully around our mapping, collaborative mapping. It's a very nice example for it. Let me just give you a snippet into it. One of the key needs to enable autonomous driving is a low time to reflect reality map. A map that reflects reality like a redundant sensor.
Yeah.
Map of the environment.
Okay.
In order to achieve that, you need to harness the power of the crowd. Now, each OEM can try to do it by his own crowd, by his own fleet. It doesn't make a lot of sense because the map would be so much better if everybody collaborates on it. And what we created in Mobileye is the marketplace for sharing this information. You get compensated for the benefits that you're creating in enabling the autonomous driving. Keep competing on it will just hold back that important asset of very, very fresh map.
That's a good example of where collaboration would really pay off. But I got to believe that there's others where, whether you are the autonomy in a box supplier or you are the OEM, the car company, you are going to want to control that data because it represents such a great cash flow.
So again, so then I would separate it between the data that is critical for making the function happen, where I do see collaborative models around mapping and around analysis of strategies of driving. Mm-hmm. By the way, it also has social benefits attached to it. It's not just a nice to have or a differentiating feature. You're not going into an Airbus or a Jumbo because of a different flight experience.
Yeah, no.
You want to have a safe flight experience.
Yeah.
So we need to get reach there together by collaborating.
A natural monopoly, the data.
So for data that is consumer related, I must admit, and I have less to comment, it's not my territory, but I'm assuming that there is where you see the OEMs striving for the direct engagement with the customer, as opposed to today, to be the owners of that customer interaction and enrich the experience through that.
Peter, how are you looking at this?
Well, data collection is a big part of our business model. We're going to equip our car with a comprehensive set of data collection sensors.
But you're working with Mobileye,
we
right?
We're working really
how's
close.
How's this going to work? Some of it's going to be shared and some of it will be controlled?
Well, that's yet to be determined. We'll see how things eke out in the future. But there's different aspects to this. I mean, there's the actual sort of social trends and movements. And there's also a dimension of personal security, which we mustn't overlook.
That's right. Can we make a hack-proof car, Erez?
Sure. Sure.
You believe that? We can make cars completely safe from hackers.
Yes.
Wow, Alexander, you see it that way?
Oh, I'm not a technology guy, but I have to say, because you say data is gold and so on, I disagree with that. It's overvalued, these data talk. Yeah. If you look at the companies that have these big data and even bigger data, and they sell us advertisements, yeah, you see the advertisement, they don't hit. Yeah. If you look at it's always wrong. In a way, and so I think this is overvalued. It is more interesting what you said. We like, as OEMs, we like to have a contact to the customer. Yeah.
Cost of ownership control.
Yeah, whatsoever. What you have, it's more the emotional part. Yeah, to have direct contact, but it's not this. Data is not gold. Yeah, data is.
There goes Peter's business model.
Yeah.
Well, it depends what type of data.
That's it.
Yeah, I think some data is not gold. I think I agree with you partly.
Yeah.
But you ask, can a car be hack-proof? I really do believe it can be.
Wow, I'm so glad to hear you guys say that.
We have a world-class cryptanalyst in our team, and I have absolute faith in the level of security that we're building into our core platform from the ground up. We're designing for it to be hack-proof from the ground up.
Awesome. Okay, we're getting down to the end here. But one of the other big discussions here on the floor or at the show here, more cars or fewer cars? If we're all going to share, maybe we don't need more cars.
That's a very simple answer. It's not the term cars is misleading then. Yeah? If you have these mobile rooms, then you wouldn't tell them cars anymore. Yeah? If you have a bus, which is a kind of a moving cafe, coffee shop, yeah, then it's not a bus anymore, it's something else. If you have these small items, boxes, econo boxes, or for ride sharing, maybe they collect themselves together to a kind of a train, a platooning train, that's not cars anymore. So I think the category car will vanish or change.
So will we need fewer or more of these
things?
Units.
Units.
There's a fascinating corollary of this, that if we go for the ride-sharing model, where a car is used 20 hours a day rather than 1 hour a day, the car is going to clock up massive mileage over a very compressed timescale. So the car is going to wear out and become old just in about 2 or 3 years rather than 13, 15. So that means that car will need to be replaced. This could be a catalyst for even accelerated technology.
You could introduce it more quickly.
Yeah, it could accelerate the pace of technology in the marketplace.
Yeah, look,
I'll just comment, we're down to the last one because of... I think that the question will become less relevant because the monetization model becomes the miles, not the cars. That's why the OEMs shouldn't be concerned of it.
Yeah, but that's a very old interpretation of transport. Transportation is not the thing. Yeah, if the car is autonomous, it's not about transportation from A to B, but what are you doing while you are on the move? Yeah, and then services. It's not about miles, it's about hours and what you're doing there, what you're able to do. The category of car will vanish and the category of transportation from A to B will change. That's the interesting part.
And we're going to have another show to talk about that because unfortunately we've run out of time. But gentlemen, thanks so much for a very fascinating discussion. Where else could we have it but here at the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show?
Not CES. Consumer Electronics.
No, it's CES. I know, but some people haven't picked up on that yet. Nonetheless, thank you for sharing all your ideas, and I really thought this was an awesome discussion.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much.